It's the My Michelle Live podcast.
My Michelle Live.
Hey, hey. Thank you for making My Michelle Live part of your listening, viewing, and reading repertoire. My Michelle Live is here for you. I am a long-time journalist and talk show host that left the big grind of corporate radio so that I could better exercise freedom of speech, so that I could be a little bit more unrestrained and not just say what you're paid to say or what someone wants you to say. This is a time in America where free speech is under challenge. You're going to hear a little bit about that in the news of the week. What we do in this program on this day is look at a week in review.
A week in review.
Yes, it is a week in review with our friend Adam Ruzzieri.
Week in review.
Oh yeah, let's turn those wheels. It's been another crazy, we're one of many voices. So I am absolutely honored. My head just explodes with joy, thinking that you're giving your time to us. We are committed to giving you underreported stories. The stories that we research, the stories that we look to see, is this real? It's not just, you'll see these, a lot of things on TikTok where people will say, I heard this, and they'll go off on TikTok. Sometimes it's just their thoughts. It's like, I heard this. That's okay, because people will challenge it and say, yeah, not so much. Here's what's really going on. And then it's debated out. That's what it should look like. We, however, will take news that is underreported and confirm it. We confirm it through the most mainstream means possible. Why is that? Because it makes it a little less refutable. Well, you're just getting that from them Fox News people. You're just getting that from MSNBC. No, and that's not how we do it here. And here's the kicker. In this age, it isn't just about information. I know we're in an information age, but it's about something deeper. You know it, and I know it. We're seeking for some deeper truth. What we look for on My Michelle Live is the God story. Okay, I've set it up enough. Now it's time to make sure you know my co-host in A Week in Review and my friend Adam Ruzzieri.
Let's review the week. The Riz Report with Adam Ruzzieri.
Hey, thank you there, big voice guy. Appreciate you as always. Man, Michelle, it's quite a week it's been. I can't believe it's already October. I mean, just it's like the older I get, the faster time flies.
A lot of ways. Science and technology on Tuesdays, and I think it's time for us to do another show on time, that they really do believe that time has possibly sped up since the beginning of the universe. And man, we're feeling it because it is freak. Yesterday was summer. I was sitting out in the backyard. It's 90 degrees up in the Pacific freaking Northwest, and I'm enjoying it. And then the next day, it was October 1st. It seems
crazy,
like.
Right? It's nuts. It's nuts. You know, you made a great point kind of right before you teed up the Riz Report from Big Voice Guy there. And it was about just finding information and getting down to the heart of what's going on and really kind of looking to the facts, right? It's not necessarily what Fox says or what the jokesters over at MSNBC say. I mean, you know, to think that anything out of Joy Reid's mouth is credible is kind of, it's laughable, right? So we really do look to, I think, the ground, right? We try to get primary data, but we also, kind of going back to like the academic side of things, we want to get several different sources to validate one fact, right? We want to make sure it's actually real, to the point where it is irrefutable. And I think the truth is really quite interesting, because it's the information that's out there doesn't always present the truth, right? Like there's a lot of things
and
out there that are
most popular pieces of research.
Forgive me.
Perfect. Perfect indeed. There are a lot of things out there that are just like, they might present as fact, but when you really dig just a little bit deep, a little bit deeper, it's just, it's like there's some sort of bias underneath that. There's some sort of underlying intention or kind of a motivation behind whatever has prompted a certain source of information. And, you know, a lot of times, well, I think the concern these days, right, it's all about information that is, it's kind of being wielded to gain power, right? Like, it's all about who controls the narrative. It's all about who gets the, I think the buy-in, right? Whether it's from the congressional level or the corporate level. The scary thing for me is kind of seeing like this
it's like follow the money, follow the power. But when you're looking so. At information or the control of information, you go back and say, okay, follow the money. Who's benefiting from it? Follow the power. Who's benefiting from it? Adam, tell me if you
increasingly centralized,
remember,
Michelle, right? Like,
tell me if you remember this. Back in the day, maybe when we were kids, you would see reports coming out of the Soviet Union, of communist China, and we would laugh at it because they're telling the people this. And right. You're going, that is so not true. Everybody knows that's not true. What the heck? Right. And these people really believe it? I mean, come on. Chinese people are brilliant. Russians aren't stupid. How do they believe this stuff? Now, do you feel like we're becoming just like that? Or is it just
Absolutely.
Me? Am I drawing a weird parallel? Come on.
You're really onto something. Because I'm even, okay, so when I was in college, right, I studied abroad in communist China for a summer.
And what? I didn't know that. Hello. That Adam gets even more interesting.
Yeah, like, you know, I learned some basic Mandarin, like, Siswo Zainar, which is like, where's the bathroom? And I could ask for Baijiu, and
that's
like,
right.
Which is like beer.
Okay. Oh my gosh, you learn language like I do. ¿Dónde está el baño? And una cerveza, por favor. Okay.
You know, basically, yeah. That's basically my proficiency in Mandarin is about that. You know, and the funny thing is when I was over there. So statistically, there are actually more English speakers in China than there are in the United States. And it's really just, it's an assertion of power sort of technique. They teach grade schoolers English so that they can come over into Western society and either bring, you know, assets back to China, back home, or assert influence in one way or another. They knew that English was a really good language for them to learn solely for business and power. And so they teach a lot of the Chinese students that. But it was interesting because when I was over there, you know, I, as a student, you know, I tried to explore different issues. And as a kid, my dad actually worked on power plant development projects in China, like when it first opened up. So as a kid, you know, my dad would be on these month-long projects in China, and he would come back with all these trinkets and souvenirs. And so I kind of acquired this natural interest for, you know, I would say the art, culture, and history of China in general. And I learned a lot about it. And the thing that I took away too was, you know, when I would meet people from China that became Americans or people that spent, you know, considerable time in China and ultimately found their way into Texas, these are people that experienced some incredibly just like life-altering events. I'm thinking about like the Tiananmen Square massacre, for example.
Yes.
You had a student uprising trying to really promote freedom in China, of all places.
Yeah.
And they were basically attacked by the Chinese military. You had tanks roll over these kids. And, you know, the crazy thing is we saw images that validate the truth of that history. But when you go to China and you say anything specific to that event in their history, nobody wants to talk about it. It's not in the books. It's as though it never happened, which is really crazy. Because if you talk to any Chinese American, any person that came from China, you know, I would say any time in the 90s, right? I mean, who doesn't know about Tiananmen Square massacre? That was a huge event. You know, Michelle, the crazy thing about that sort of society is the government does dictate what's real and what's not real. And I say that with air quotes, right? Not real and real.
Mm-hmm.
Today, we're seeing President Xi literally kind of more strongly assert his own power over the Chinese people and over China's society. You'll find like his image all over the place. He's trying to kind of make the society increasingly more oppressive, utilizing technology to do so, to monitor Chinese citizens, to track where they go, who they talk to, what they talk about. And that includes people who are in China as well, but also Chinese nationals who come to our country.
Okay, so let's think about this for just a moment, Adam. When we look at back in the day and say, yeah, we kind of looked at that and go, well, that's crazy. And now we're at a place where information is being controlled. And that's a big issue in the news this week that we're going to talk about. And then we're looking at more and more control over people, where you go, who you talk to, what you're allowed to say in private conversations. Where does it end? If we've already followed down that path, because it works, it works. Right. It keeps the people who want to be in power and who want to make the money, getting power and making more money. Let's talk about some of the news stories that took place this week. And we'll just start from the top right on down. You may remember this news story that we covered last week, and I'll tell you what, it continues. Take a listen.
What a bizarre spectacle to see two important world leaders.
This is Biden and Boris Johnson last week.
So much so, it was quite difficult to hear anything anyone was saying. I mean, that was the first thing that was utterly bizarre. And I think Boris Johnson, and of course, you know, our culture, as yours has always been, is that leaders are accountable to the press from all sides and all opinions who can ask questions. And I think Boris was completely stunned that the new culture in America, who are supposed to be the leaders of the free world, is that the president doesn't take questions. So Boris decided to sort of, in an impromptu way, to try and take a few questions, and the White House press team didn't like it and protested. And so we're sort of asking ourselves a question here in the UK this morning. If Joe Biden doesn't take questions from journalists and therefore isn't accountable for what he's doing as leader of America and leader of the free world, we have to ask ourselves a question. Is he actually fit and proper and competent to be doing the job?
Well, there you go. And that was then. This is now, where Joe Biden is now annoyed with the U.S. press asking these off-topic questions as he met with a leader from India. Listen to this. And this, let me say that this was not officially part of the press conference. This was someone recording this. And interestingly enough, we can find video for this too, just so you can see this is actually happening. But that explains the poor quality of the audio.
I think what we're going to do is bring in the press. The Indian press is much better behaved than the American press. I got to watch out, though. Knock one of those down. And I think, with your permission, you should not answer questions.
Okay, I'm going to play it again, and I'm going to turn it up just a little bit. I want you to hear this.
I think what we're going to do is bring in the press. The Indian press is much better behaved than the American press. I got to watch out, though. Knock one of those down. And I think, with your permission, you should not answer questions because they won't ask any questions on point.
Once again, Mr. President, let me thank you.
So you hear him say a little bit more. The Indian press better behave than the U.S.
Thank you, everyone.
There's people. Mr. President. And he's just saying, not going to do it. So there's two things that are very important. I wanted to show the video, but it came with some side images that are just really inappropriate. So like, you're just going to listen to it today. Okay. For those of you who are viewing, I spared you that.
Is it a bunch of Hunter Biden selfies, Michelle? Or
basically, there you go. Yeah. There's two things that you heard in that. The U.S. press is badly behaved. It's, you know, Grandpa Joe, it's not your responsibility to keep them in line. It's your responsibility to answer their questions. And number two, they're not going to ask questions that are on point. In other words, they're not going to follow my narrative. They're not going to give me what I have been pre-prescribed to talk about. That's the job of the press. For crying out loud, the press sucks anymore. And where they don't, now you want to shut them down there as well. Come on, what's up?
That's like just how it is. It's like the good people in the press are the ones that are filing lawsuits to get information from the government that's being exposed or that's being covered up, right? It's crazy, Michelle, that you literally have President Biden running from anything that's not like pre-approved in terms of who's asking the question and which questions are being asked. You know, when I was in China, right, you have like a Ministry of Information. It's the propaganda machine, and they control the press. They control everything that entertains the public and informs the public. And in our society, it works very differently, right? Our press is supposed to keep our officials that we elect accountable to what we elect them to do. It's not the other way around. So the press for our society is incredibly important, but they only work though when they're free, right? When they're able to ask the questions that matter, the things that we care about. And when you hear President Biden literally calling our press badly behaved, you know, and then saying, you know what, I don't think we should take any questions from them. Well, what are you afraid of? Why can't they ask you any questions? You know, our last president, right? President Trump and presidents before him, Obama, President Bush, these presidents would take questions in front of a Marine One. They would take questions at Air Force One. They would take questions at the podium. They would take questions while they were walking from one meeting to another. You know, they were very available and accessible to the journalists that are asking very important questions on our behalf, because we don't get invites to the White House, right? We don't get invites to Congress. And man, like lately, most of Congress has been gated off from the public, right? So, you know, when we're not given access at all, and then those who are basically given access on our behalf, being the press, being those journalists who are trying to really uncover the truth and follow it, man, like what's actually going on there, guys? What's going on there? I would like to know. I definitely liked what I was hearing from our British, that British voice there. I think it was Nigel Farage, maybe. But, you know, even when they're saying bad things with that accent, it sounds quite good and quite proper. But when you really listen to what's being said there, there are some serious concerns that we should dig into.
This president actually has had the lightest schedule of any U.S. president in history, and has been less accessible to the press than any U.S. president before him. That is huge. So what does that say? That gives you only the opportunity to hear what they want you to say. There is no challenge, but that is the going idea of America. And you know what? America, I'm sorry, tune out now because I'm going to insult you. You love it. You eat it up. You only want to hear what you want to hear. You don't want to be challenged. You don't want to have your antithesis broadcast anywhere. Just what I believe is true. And I want to ask you, so who the heck made you the arbiter of all truth? How is it that you happen to know all? You are an expert in all things. And the experts that agree with you, well, they're the ones who really know. I cannot tell you how many times I've seen on social media, well, the vast majority of scientists, oh, really? You know, the vast majority of scientists at one time believed the world was flat. Oh, and did you know the vast majority of doctors thought the guy who said, you know, germs can cause us to be sick if we don't wash our hands, you know, if you're working one patient and then another, you're spreading germs. Oh, you know, yeah, we're going to see these tiny little invisible monsters going from patient to patient. Right? Come on, wake up. If you are not challenging what you think is truth, how do you know your truth is so true. Get off your high horse and start being willing to think.
Are you trying to say that those Venetian masks with perfume in them don't actually stop the plague?
Well, you know, and you know, to a degree, I think if we want to get into that, essential oils did play a role in protecting people. There's an essential oil called Thieves, and it was based on an idea that these thieves would steal these expensive oils and they never got sick from the plague. Well, why was that? Well, see, that's just another way of thinking. It's another way of saying, is there something to this? And while other people were saying, oh, well, that's ridiculous, looking into something helps to foster your truth or to break it down so that you can, as a society, be better, stronger, and have your science built on something a little bit more stable. But we've been doing this for over half a century since we've been putting what one author called zombie science in our schools and saying, well, this is the way it is, Darwinian evolution, and it is not allowed to be challenged. What are you afraid of? And I will say it again, for those who are new to the class, that even in the Bible, God says, come, let us reason together. Test me, try me, prove me. If God's not afraid of the challenge, who the heck are we? And this is part of the big stories of the week with Joe Biden wanting to control all information. And what happens when you do that? When you do that, you start to see people breaking out and saying, no way. I wanted to share a story where YouTube has actually decided to ban completely prominent and what they call anti-vaccine activists. They call them anti-vaccine activists. Anybody who says, wait, there's been a problem. Wait, there's been a study. Wait, there's a number of people who have myocarditis, pericarditis, or have died from the vaccine. We need to look into this and make vaccines better. Suddenly, they are anti-vaccine activists. And they are people like Joseph Mercola, who is a well-known doctor, and a name you might recognize, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. YouTube is taking down these video channels, the whole channel, anyone associated with these high-profile vaccine, anti-vaccine activists. And the press that did report this said, well, you know, experts, all those people, the consensus say these misinformation researchers have for years been putting out content, and it's contributing to the growing skepticism of life-saving vaccines. When in the world has skepticism ever been wrong? And I'm going to tell you, a lot of this does come from a more liberal side of the aisle. But having grown up in the most left-leaning household in America, a very left-leaning idea drilled into my psyche from the earliest of ages, and the blocking of I-5 as I'm in my little stroller, you know, sucking on my bottle and protesting God knows what, was that you should question authority. Whatever happened to that?
Well, that's the crazy thing too about YouTube specifically, right? YouTube is a social community. It's not like a knowledge library of peer-reviewed stuff, right? Like it's a place where you're allowed to have conversations and to explore issues and to have opinions, right? Like here they're citing misinformation researchers. Well, when you look at some of who those researchers are, it's everybody
PhDs
to PhDs
and virologists and people who are experts in their field, much more expert than some newly graduated college student that works for YouTube and the social media site. Who are they? Yeah.
But without question.
Let me say that, well, that was probably unfair, because what they're doing is basing their information off of who they say are the trusted experts. Trust the government. Always trust the government. Again, whatever happened to question authority?
Yeah, and when you hear things like trust the government and whatever the government says is written in stone, I mean, well, it's a little like Putin. It's a little like China. It's a little unlike America. It's not how it should be, right? We should be allowed to question the government, and we should question the government. The reason why our country is so great is because it focuses on small government, right? We don't want the government to have all the power. We want the people to have the power. And when you give up that power, it's really, really hard to get it back.
It has been said that already. If you want to get those freedoms and power back, it will come with the blood of our children and our children's children. They will have to fight what we've fought in the past to regain those freedoms. They are not easy to get back. We are, Adam, afraid of being challenged. Is that because our truth is on such shaky ground that we don't want to have it challenged? I'll give you an example. In the press, you may have heard this story. Whoopi Goldberg reportedly is threatening to quit The View, along with possibly Joy Behar, because of reports that Candace Owens is being considered by the producers as being part of The View. Candace Owens is outspoken. She's very well-researched. She's extremely articulate. And they don't want someone like her. What?
It's like walking on set and then just like getting any given piece of glass and then just slamming it on the floor. Like, that's like Candace coming into that environment, man, is like breaking something that needs to be broken, frankly. And man, like, she could do a great job for that when it just comes to bringing a more balanced approach to every single topic they cover, because a lot of what you see on The View, it's really unfair in a lot of cases, like how they cover topics with such bias, so far to the left that they lose sight of what's real. So if you have somebody like Candace Owens go in there, and you have someone who represents the other half of America, maybe we can find a way to come together on some issues.
You don't have to like Candace Owens. Fine. And Whoopi, you don't like Candace Owens. Okay. But what an opportunity to say, she doesn't know her. How can you not like her? Oh, I don't like what she has to say. I don't like what she stands for. I don't like her politics. Fine. Grow up, Whoopi. Grow up, Joy. Learn to talk with people who you disagree with. Show America what the heck it's supposed to look like. Show us what disagreement should look like, what the rest of us grown-ups have to do. I have a best friend, Adam, who we've been friends since we were 6 years old. Our friendship has lasted decades, decades, decades. We've gone through the ups and downs of life together, much like as you're listening, you may have friends like that. We have differed on politics probably since we were young. And yet we are friends. We will talk about it, and then we'll go off and do the things that best friends do. We're there for each other. She stretches me. She keeps me from being in my bubble. She gives great, challenging information that I go, there's some truth to that. Okay, how does that fit in with my worldview? And that is how it looks. So now we have these elites on television who can't seem to pull it together enough to have a civil or even a heated but respectful conversation with someone they disagree with. I'm wondering, are they just too afraid that Candace is too damn smart and articulate, well-researched with truth, that they will challenge their view a little too much?
They might be right, though. If they're afraid of her being smart and a little bit too prepared, they might be right, because she does know what she's talking about. She doesn't just speak from the rear. You know, she really does look into the issues that are important and on her mind. And, you know, I think the thing that's been sad about The View historically, right, you've seen The View bring in people to their show that do represent a different side of the fence, right? They represent a different side of the argument or the discussion. But The View has brought those kind of people to their show, not in good faith, to have an honest and open conversation. They bring people like Don Jr. to their show to attack them, right? So I think if you actually do have a good faith, well, a setup from the start, right? Bring someone that you know is different, bring someone that you know feels and sees things differently than you, but don't bring them in to attack them. Bring them in to have an open and fair conversation. Bring them in as friends to begin with, and then have an open, honest conversation.
That's really idealistic, right? Adam. That's not gonna.
but it should be possible, right? It should be possible for us.
No, because if it bleeds, it leads. If it bleeds, it leads. And if I can get you on my show and I can cut you and make you bleed, boom, ratings. It's just the way it is. But no, this is another aspect of the news this week that affects you as you're watching, because as YouTube shuts out alternative voices or voices that challenge what you're supposed to think, that gives a lot of people this need to find something else. History lesson. Seriously, did any of us pay attention in history class? Dude, I'm the one who was more social and passing notes to Dina, two aisles down than I was, thinking about academics. It's true. I admit it. But still, in the midst of it, I learned something about history. You suppress people and they uprise and it strengthens. When you turn up the fire, people get freaking fired up. That's the truth. That's what's happened when you look at the suppression of truth. People get fired up. Why do you think Tiananmen Square happened? Because people were like, oh no, we've got to stand up for truth. Why do you think when back in the day when Christians were put to death, ripped apart by lions, torn up, put to death at the stake, why do you think the Christian movement grew like never before? People were fervent. It was their life. Because when you turn up the heat, people get fired up. People are getting fired up in a less, appropriate way. There has been a huge F Joe Biden movement. Oh, people like Chris Pratt. He's there at the forefront. Good old Pratt.
the evil side of me also wants to be there too. But it's kind of been interesting to see, and this has kind of been like starting since the early part of September, and it's really sort of, I guess, just like a teapot or a pressure cooker, it's kind of reached that critical mass where you have so much content floating around social media and now in live sporting events where you have entire stadiums chanting F Joe Biden, F Joe Biden. And of course, there's a response to that, right? Physics, So now you have people saying F Donald Trump. And so it's like, are we becoming increasingly divided as a country?
We are, but
the country saying, folks, F Joe Biden,
Donald now, Trump F is Donald no Trump longer president, though. I mean,
that's what I thought.
So I
orange man bat syndrome.
Because you're saying I stand against what this president is doing in a less than appropriate way, it doesn't mean that you are a Trump supporter either. So I don't get, but you're right. It's physics.
I think it's terrible though that we've seen our country come to a point where you literally have in New York City, right? 9/11, you have the Yankees playing the Mets and F Joe Biden is being yelled on 9/11, right? For a reason. The Ryder Cup, a golf event where you're not supposed to clap too loud. You have people yelling F Joe Biden. By Tuesday of this week, there are already 100,000 F. Joe Biden tweets. And of course, like you said, Donald Trump's not the president anymore. And really, at a certain point, I think our country does sort of become a pressure cooker and there has to be some sort of release for that pressure. And historically, the thing that I think is really tragic is a lot of times when you see things domestically get really, really bad, then all of a sudden the country is surprised by some sort of international military conflict where we actually start to lose lives of our kids, for various different reasons in various different parts of the world. And it's a terrible thing to see. And I really hope that we don't see our country be distracted by some terrible and potentially, I don't want to say worthless, but some sort of very unrelated kind of military conflict to distract our attention from really what's taking place here at home. You know, I'm really concerned about that.
Wow. I have to say that's not something that my mind was going towards, but that is another part of history. If we do not learn from history and remember history, my friend, we are doomed to repeat it. History does indeed repeat itself. It's weird. But because of this pushback and the F Joe Biden, people finding ways to get their message out there, instead of maybe more peaceful, civilized ways, like, I don't know, social media, we're going to see places like Rumble, which is a place that you can post videos without the founder of Rumble has said, look, I'm here for free speech. I'm not going to insert or assert my political stance on people. And so you're going to see... you're going to see these companies rise and potentially places like YouTube start to lose some of their power. It's hard for us being very focused in America on what's happening today to think about what happens tomorrow. But ask Kodak, who thought that they would be in power and successful forever making film. Instead of getting in on the digital age a little bit better, they've kind of gone the way of the dinosaur. It does happen. Nothing lasts forever. And other ways that you're seeing fight back, there is an interesting lawsuit, a couple of them. One is coming from a media person by the name of John Stossel. Now, John Stossel is kind of known as an outspoken libertarian. A libertarian, I don't know, in the traditional sense, libertarian is basically saying, politically, dude, you do you, I'm going to do me, and it's all going to be cool unless me doing me impedes on you doing you or vice versa. That's the basic idea of libertarianism. Now, within libertarianism, there are still some social leanings where, yeah, we have to intervene here or we might intervene there, and that can be all debated. But John Stossel had something interesting happen to him. And he's taking action.
I love what we're seeing from John Stossel. And I've really appreciated his content over, frankly, decades of his career. It's a lot of very educational stuff that asks a lot of very honest and, I think, thoughtful questions. And it was interesting to come across this tweet from John Stossel. And it was basically him saying, Facebook and, quote, fact-checking activist at a group called Climate Feedback claimed I pushed misleading information. But I never made the claim they said I did. Even after pointing it out to them, they doubled down. Now I'm suing. So you have John Stossel now going after these fact-checking organizations that really Facebook leans on for fact-checking all of the content that goes through their platforms. And there are two specific fact-checkers in particular that I want to point out here. And they're both fact-checking organizations that get their funding from two very, very far left-leaning groups. One is George Soros's Open Society Foundations, and then the other one is a network of fact checkers that are run by the Poynter Institute. And these are one of just a handful of fact checking organizations that Facebook and social media's establishment lean on for deciding what's real and what's not real. And they're sitting here now trying to go after John Stossel, among many other Americans, right? And Michelle, I think before we started this show today, We kind of started with the quote, or just the idea of, you know, together we are strong, divided we fall, right? Just the idea that we should be able to have a society that facilitates both sides of the conversation and doesn't stifle them. And here we have, once again, mainstream social media shutting down a very, very honest and credentialed journalist, John Stossel of all people, right? We've seen them come after us individually. They've come after my company, Michelle, on multiple platforms. You know, it's like that whack-a-mole game. You know, it's like, where are we? We're asking questions over here, and now we're asking questions over there. Boom, 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 knocking us down. The tragic thing, though, is that they're using AI to shut down just average user accounts, right? And it's nearly impossible to get an explanation as to why your account was shut down. It's extremely cumbersome and really, really exhausting just to argue the reason for your shutdown, right? So just for the average user to be shut down, it's unlikely that you're going to return to that platform and start to ask the same sort of questions. The result of that is self-censorship. And now, you know, you have the same type of organizations and people being shut down across multiple platforms. So we're seeing the creation of this this parallel economy. If you have payment processors shutting down people that ask really valid questions about COVID, ask really valid questions about the elections and other topics like Stossel asking questions about climate change, you also have the same thing happening across the other mainstream platforms that support an organization's ability just to operate. You know, now you're going to start seeing...
And you have Stossel, by the way, as a reporter, it is your job, traditionally. Right. Maybe not anymore. Right. Your job used to be to ask those hard questions, no matter how ridiculous, of any subject, any person that you're interviewing, any issue that you're taking on, to look at the other side. It's part of debate. It's part of that challenge. Yes. Now it's just to opine your opinion, look cute on camera, and to say whatever talking points you've been given that day.
Well, you mentioned Rumble, Michelle. It's like, all right, so you get shut down on YouTube, right? And then, okay, well, you switch over to Vimeo, become a paying customer, boom, shut down on Vimeo.
Because and you don't get your money back, by the way. I just want to let you know.
You don't get your money back.
Know that from personal experience. Yeah. Oh, and if you contact them and say, wait a minute, I wasn't giving misinformation, or I wasn't I'm sorry, you are a danger to society, and we will no longer have correspondence with you. So, yes. You know, I don't know, where'd my canceled hat go? I need to have well, danger to society hat written
up now. Well, Michelle, you know, you run from YouTube to Vimeo, and then you land on Rumble, but then you realize also that Rumble's in a lawsuit against Google for basically de-emphasizing their videos on Google search. So you know that, like, when you're on this other platform that will actually allow free speech to take place, that the other platforms that kind of relies on for visibility being just the Google search results, they're not going to show you as prominently because you're on Rumble and not on YouTube, which is, of course, Google's own product.
And so if you're using this for your business, then it truly affects your business. So that's where I wanted to get to another lawsuit and potentially more class action lawsuits from regular people like you and I.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think kind of going back to the joint lawsuit filed by President Trump and the America First Policy Institute against big tech, this is probably one of the strongest suits right now moving through the courts, the legal system, through the courts. And I think really as citizens, if you go to takeonbigtech.com and share your own story about being censored on social media, it will give this particular lawsuit anecdotes that it needs to prove that the social media platforms are rampantly shutting down anybody with anything to say that they happen to disagree with. I think that we're kind of in a position now where we have to turn to the legal system to fix this. And I have concerns about that in general, just because there are some activist judges that they are actually people who have political aspirations. They want to not be a judge for forever, but they want to be in other positions of power in our government. So, you know, we have to kind of be very vocal about what's right and what's wrong. It's beyond just social media at this point. It's also at the point where organizations that are trying to fight for our freedom are being denied simple access to payment processing solutions. You know, so when you have companies like PayPal, you know, part of big tech's established elite, and other organizations that are really important to processing Visa transactions or you know, debit transactions, things like that. Well, how do you pay your bills? How do you pay your staff? How do you pay for content? How do you operate? You know, the creation of this parallel economy really, really concerned me in some ways, because it's just kind of going back to this concept of division. And what happens when this parallel economy becomes so great that all of a sudden, you know, years from now, we're just like, well, you know what? We basically have two countries in one. I mean, that's kind of like, that kind of tees up potentially the terror and devastation of a civil war. That's not at all what we should be working for. I think we have to, in a lot of ways, reject the concept of a parallel economy and go back to taking what's ours, which is a free and fair economy for everybody.
Yeah, indeed, because what you're saying is, all right, you won't do business with me. All right, I'm going to go do business over here because they like my kind. My kind, your kind is not welcome here. Okay, I'll go over here. And you see that a lot of, you know, if you're not vaccinated or if you're of this persuasion, we can discriminate against you. Okay. You can't, you have to be in some places forced to make a cake for a gay wedding when you're not a proponent, when you don't believe that gay marriage should be a thing, even if you love the people. And I, you know, I'm not going to say that some people aren't hateful in it. I'm not going to go that far, but I will say for the most part, you see people that say, yeah, that's fine. You want to be with whoever you want to be. But I believe marriage is a institution founded by God, and God says it's between a man and a woman. So if God founded it, he should be able to say what it is. You know, that, okay, whatever. That's just an example. And that end, you know, you cannot discriminate, but it's okay to have that kind of your kind isn't welcome. It really needs to be across the board or not at all. And I say not at all. I say not at all. I mean, really, come on. We're at a place where there was a business that said, hey, if you wear a mask, don't come in here. If, you know, if you don't love the flag, don't come in here. It's kind of a pushback. Like you had mentioned, F Joe Biden. Well, F Joe Trump then. I mean, it's the stuff we saw in the sandbox at kindergarten. Well, then you can't come into my establishment. Where does it end? It's that alternate economy that we're creating that leads to more division.
It's crazy to see that there are literally, Michelle, people that are being ostracized and eliminated from mainstream society.
Oh my gosh.
Who are guilty of no crimes, businesses that are guilty of no wrongdoing, but they maybe said a few things that, you know, one of the established companies in big tech just disagree with, right? It's really crazy to see how we're picking and choosing and alienating based on ideas.
Okay,
that,
picking, choosing, really alienating, firing. And this was an interesting story that I wanted to just kind of toss in here, that the governor of New York has a plan to replace unvaccinated healthcare workers, because across the country, our hospitals are at 150%. And we are under this idea that it's because of the unvaccinated. There's two things that I want to point out that we need to consider. If you've only had one shot and you get a shot, and the next of two, and the next day you are sick to death and you go into the hospital with COVID symptoms, you are unvaccinated. And so you're counted as unvaccinated. That's not to say that unvaccinated people, completely unvaccinated, I'm not getting it, aren't getting sick. I'm not saying that. But we're also not counting people who have had one shot or two shots and are within 2 weeks of getting that shot. We're not counting them at all. But this governor said, you know, all of you healthcare workers who were heroes last year, you're zeros this year. If you are unvaccinated, the second reason that our hospitals are filling up, Adam, is because when you have fewer healthcare workers, you can only have one nurse cover six beds. There's only so many people you can take into your hospital before you're not giving service, before you're putting yourself in the liability state. Well, this Democratic governor is touting a plan to replace unvaccinated healthcare workers with foreign workers.
Oh, so I heard the National Guard. I didn't know foreign workers as well. That's insane. Boom. You know, before, when Cuomo got ousted, I was like, okay, maybe there's hope for New York. Maybe Hochul will be a good person. But, you know, she's literally wearing a vaxxed necklace. And it's like the new religion, you know. It's just, it's really crazy to see that actually taking place. We're literally
with a jihad. It's a religion with a jihad.
And the new cross is a mask and a freaking necklace that says vaxxed on it. It's insane.
Yeah, it is. It is insane because what is more important than vaccination is immunization. Have you been immunized? 34 million Americans have gotten COVID and have survived it and have spectacular immunity that extends through whatever variant at times. Right. Or if you get exposed again, you're less likely to get seriously ill. You experience that with the flu. Once you've had the flu, next year there's another variant. Well, you'll get less sick, or you might not have symptoms at all. Thank God. That's what happens with viruses. With the flu shot, it's a thing. If you get a flu shot next year, you need another flu shot because there's a new variant. And if that's how you choose to protect yourself, okay, that's fine. That's on you. But if people choose to use this thing called natural immunity because they have a less than 1% chance of succumbing to the illness, that should be their choice as well. Both provide immunity, people. Both protect you from the virus. And neither one is going to keep you from getting someone else sick. So can I just say this right out, and then I want your comments, Adam. No, because someone didn't get vaccinated, they didn't kill your sister, your brother, your mother, or your grandma. No, because you, Miss Vax, you, Mr. Vax, you can carry the virus just as easily. You can spread it just as easily, and you probably do it more because you're walking around in this wonderful, arrogant, protected state of, I'm vaccinated and you're not. I'm the elite. Go ahead, Adam. Well, another soapbox. Get out. Shut up, Michelle.
You are literally going to be banned from YouTube forever because you're actually talking about like actual science, you know, this concept of immunization versus vaccination. And, you know, why can't anybody ask questions like, okay, well, you haven't been vaccinated. Okay, I understand that. But do you have the antibodies? You can't ask those questions, and it's ridiculous that you can't. You have health coworkers, just like you said, who were hailed as heroes last year. And now you have this nurse who I just saw on TV recently, who she was basically permanently suspended from her job for refusing vaccination because she's pregnant. And the last time she was pregnant, she was, I think at 18 weeks, she lost her child. And so this is a very important situation for her, right? She's very, very mindful of everything she's putting into her body because she wants to bring this kid to term. But because she doesn't want to get vaccinated while she's pregnant, she's being kicked out of her job after having spent over a year, almost 2 years, I think, treating COVID patients. She probably already has the antibodies. I mean, if we're being honest. So it's ridiculous to think that because she won't get the jab on this mRNA vaccine that, you know, because by the way, the Johnson & Johnson non-mRNA vaccine, the dead virus vaccine, that one's like hard to get these days. So if you did want to have a choice, like that choice has also been sort of taken away from you as well.
And I don't understand either, but we have things that people should know. If you have decided to get the vaccine because you think that it's less of a risk than getting the virus, there's some science to that. But there's also studies that are showing and concerns that in the next 2 to 5 years, we're going to see an increase in deaths from people who were vaccinated. So if we are not talking about that, we can't be protected. We can't say, okay, that's a reality. And maybe it's a small chance. But here's what you can do to offset that. Here's some things that you can do to protect yourself so that you're not dealing with some of these problems that they predict later down the road in the trials. Why were the trials stopped with animals? Because too many died. Why can't we learn from that, either make vaccines better or give people tools so that they can offset any problems in the future? Because we shut out information, and that was one of the biggest news stories of the week. Another one is another spin, and I want you to weigh in on that and then lead us into VP Harris and Israeli genocide. So, you know, let's segue here.
So this is like kind of picking up from the COVID conversation, this actual difference of like the truth from, quote, your truth, right? Like there is a, there are two sides to any story, but there's one truth, right? There's not a your truth. There's not a, there's just the truth. And so you have VP Harris here, and this came out, and this is actually just really terrible and kind of shocking, but there was an event at George Mason University in Virginia where VP Harris was speaking to a group of college kids, and this student asks VP Harris a question, and she's accusing U.S. policy of facilitating, quote, ethnic genocide of Palestinians by Israel. So you have Harris on video nodding in agreement as this female student, she's, I guess she identified as half Yemeni, half Iranian, as she's blasting the United States for supporting Israel with respect to giving them money for the Iron Dome. And so she's blasting our support of Israel and our allies in the Middle East and saying that we are basically enabling this ethnic genocide. And VP Harris doesn't correct her. VP Harris doesn't argue with her at all. She basically says, well, it's important that your truth is heard. You know, it's basically she's saying you're so brave for telling us how you feel. Instead of saying, well, you know what, that's actually total garbage.
Or, you know, there's that. Another side to consider as well. You know, that's fine. I don't mind someone just having some kind of reasonable discussion is just no longer allowed. I'm sorry. It's just
not at all. But unacceptable. Michelle, we have our highest level officials who are supposed to represent our country basically not standing up for us. Right. They're not standing up for American policy. They're not standing up for American allies. And now we have Iranian state media using this as ammunition to kind of drum up their own base, right? To drum up those in Iran who hate Israel and who want to basically eradicate Israel as a state, as a country, right? Like they're using VP Harris's words and her actions really against us. And so they see us, they see our leadership as weak. Gosh, I mean, who knows? Like you probably have Putin over there shirtless on horseback laughing on like a daily basis. What are they going to say next?
And Putin is just like, image out, eraser.
He's like, I'm very strong man. You see me on horse, no shirt, very strong. Yes. Like that's probably Putin on a daily basis. you know, like why can't we get leaders that actually like do stand up for us and do care about our country in a way that we do?
Yeah, it's because then they're racist. So there you go. Can't have that. Come on. You can't have that. So this is where we're at. And on top of it, we have Congress spending like mad. They have how many pages is this spending bill? 24,000.
It's like 2,400 pages.
100, rather.
Like really dense legalese, like 2,400 pages of legislation that literally. So I saw this image from my congressman, Representative Van Taylor, and it was a picture that he posted. And he was just like 649 pages into Biden and Pelosi's. I guess the actual like with the index and everything, it's like 2,739 pages. But he's like, I'm 649 pages deep. Okay, so I was looking at something, and basically just to get through one page of this stuff, because it's like, it's full of like legal jargon and references to old legislation. I mean, at best, if you're actually trying to comprehend the content of this bill, it takes you at least 5 minutes per page to understand what the heck it's talking about.
There's that picture up on the screen for you who are watching. Yeah. 649 pages into Biden and Pelosi's.
202 hours. Just to get through that, Michelle, 202 hours just to get through the 2,400 pages of it at 5 minutes per page straight. So I think like why can't we make it a thing where whatever legislation we're going to vote on, like every single person who's casting a vote has to certify that, yes, I have in fact read every single page.
Come on. Number one. Number two, a bill should only be about the issue at hand, not how many more roads can we build in, or what are
so
defunding the police in Chicago. It needs to be about the issue only. Get the pork out. These are crazy issues. This spending bill when you do the math, and I don't math, but it's billions of dollars per page, $3.5 trillion in spending. It's like,
$11,000 per second, every second for 10 years straight.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
New debt. So
how do we pay for it?
Well, let's just tax the heck out of, every business that's out there.
Okay, so I'm showing on the screen a famous dress of tax the rich. And the hypocrisy, people are so blinded. And going back to our theme of today, how we are no longer allowed to challenge. And so when you're not allowed to challenge, you can get to a place where it almost looks like Hunger Games and the Capitol, where we're lavish and we spout off what we believe, and there is absolutely no challenge allowed. So the famous dress that was worn that says tax the rich is so ironically hypocritical, because it was at the Met Gala where she had to spend more than the average American makes per year for a ticket. And secondly, why is it that we consider the rich the people who make just a little bit more than we do, right?
So I actually have some IRS data here. It's not on our sheet here, but it's from the IRS, and this is just based on fiscal year 2018 about who actually pays taxes, right? And so, like, the concept of, pay your fair share, right? So the top 1% in our country pay more than 40% of income taxes. The top 10% in our country paid more than 71% of all income taxes. And the top 25% paid more than 87% of all income taxes. You know, if you're talking about using these same people and the small businesses in our country that exist to pay for this, it's not just $3.5 trillion. It's actually closer to about $5 trillion when you look at everything. But your problems are is you have small businesses that are the biggest source of job creation. And when those businesses are doing well, it's also the source of wage growth. So if you guys want to make money and make more of it, you need the small businesses to do well. When you tax these businesses, it's basically a tax on investment in our future, right? There's less of an incentive for these businesses to grow and to operate. It would basically cripple this additional tax burden would cripple the ability of small businesses to continue to compete against foreign competitors. I think it was either, I have to double check this stat, it was either 40% or 60% of all retailers on Amazon are actually Chinese-owned businesses. So, you know, when you talk about U.S. small business versus foreign business in general, we need our companies in America to do well, for all of us to do well. So let's not cripple them with this ridiculous spending bill that literally
adds $25,000 in new debt to every person. Let's just put it in perspective for you who are listening right now. You're a household. Your portion of the bill, are you ready to get, you know, like, okay, waiter, bill, please? $27,000 for your household. Can you afford that? Boom.
You could literally get a new RAV4, a new Toyota RAV4 for about $26,350, according to our data here. You could get 5 years of groceries for that much. I mean, you could get 13 years of really nice clothing. 13 years worth of it.
Well, this
or,
is
or
where...
Or you could just save money. You could just save it.
And, you know, I'm just... someone I was talking with yesterday was saying this is basically a lot of things like infrastructure, where... if you, my friend is in Puerto Rico, and he said, you know, I drove from Seattle to Florida, and now I live in Puerto Rico. Spent 6 months to do it. He said, I have yet to see a really, really, really bad road in the United States of America. He said, here in Puerto Rico, every place is bad. Bought a brand new vehicle, within a month it is thrashed because there are hardly any good roads there. This is where... you're saying, okay, what are we really spending our money on? And it's not so much some of the spending, social programs, free community colleges, free this and that for people. All right, they're the folks in power. They're, you know, they have the right to try to put through this legislation, fine. That's not so much the issue. It's the things we don't know about. And in fact, no one really knows about in this bill, 24,000 pages. Again, what I would like to see in Adam's list of what a bill should be is, if you have a bill, it needs to be readable by the average American.
Yes.
And it needs to be able to be put in so many pages so that the average American can read it in one evening. That's
what you need to read it.
Yeah. And know what's in it, because the average American doesn't. And that creates a further divide between them and us. So this is where
way too much common sense, Michelle.
Way too much common sense. But it really does come back to we the people. What are we allowed to know? It becomes more and more difficult as we take our final moments together in this week in review. It becomes more and more difficult for us to know the truth. And remember, the God story in that is the truth will set you free. Do not be afraid to challenge your truth. Even when you talk about the God story, who God is, and the consistency for me that I found scientifically, historically, and spiritually in the Bible, I'm not afraid to challenge that. I'm not afraid to say, okay, what you got? Because the truth will indeed set you free. I'm Michelle Mendoza. Adam Ruzieri is my co-host as we look at a week in review. We'll catch you next week with science and technology, Health Watch, news and views, sports, entertainment, and so much more. But in all of it, we get to the God story. Thanks for joining us. And thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
For more fun, go to MyMichelleLive.com.
Pow!